Welcome to So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey, presented by Betches Media. This is an exploration of all pop culture, from the classic reality TV moments of the past and present to the latest Daily Mail headlines and everything in between. We'll dive into all the infamous and notorious messes you can't stop watching. We're looking at you, Tom Sandoval. Folks, welcome to an all-new episode of So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. This is your pal Ryan, and this is your Monday episode. How the heck is everybody doing? How was your weekend? Was it good? I hope it was the best weekend ever. If it wasn't, don't worry. We get another chance to do it this week to make it better. It is Monday. We're full of hope, hopefully. But I hope you had a great weekend. The weekend was kind of so-so for me. I'm kind of glad to get going into the week. And then I think I'm going to go to Arizona this week and see my dad, which I'm really excited about. I guess next weekend is Easter. Man, that... By the way, isn't it funny as you get older, everything sneaks up on you? So you're always like, wow, that snuck up on me, huh? Hey, Christmas, that snuck up on me. Thanksgiving, that snuck up on me. That is what being older is, just a constant array of saying, that snuck up on me. Anyways, there is so much to talk about. We have an insanely great guest today to do the Pop Culture Roundup. The first time on the podcast with us, we have the one, the only, the legendary Kempire. If you don't know Kempire, man, you got to go to YouTube. You got to go to subscribe to his YouTube channel, Kempire. He is amazing. He's a legend. There are so many things he's doing. He's doing live shows now. He is the king of pop culture. I consider myself, a liege of pop culture? I don't know, but he was excellent. He came in and I just had the best time talking to him. So I hope you have the best time listening. If you are here just to hear Kempire, use the timestamp. Skip to him right now. It is good. It's okay. It's not going to hurt my feelings. In fact, I probably won't ever know about it, but go there. We talk about everything. Man, I even watched Potomac tonight, you guys. The last 10 minutes, I was told by one of the people in the Facebook group, watch the last 10 minutes. Gordon and Mia, oh my God, Mia is with this Mr. Inc., somebody that's not Gordon, and potentially one of their kids isn't even Gordon's. And it is one of the most realistic scenes. Your hair stands up. You get like goose pimples because you're like, what the hell is going on? Like, you know, even like they break the fourth wall, you see like cameras like, hey, Gordon, come talk to us. It is so wild. I mean, even if you haven't watched Potomac this season, because I know it, you know, got a little long in the tooth, just skip to the last 15 minutes. And then next week is the reunion. And you see Gordon in the reunion preview, like waving howdy to Mr. Inc. on FaceTime. I'm like, what is going on here? Like, is Andy Cohen going to have to do like you are not the father? Is he going to do like a Maury Povich next week? Andy's got a new career as like Maury Povich, just doing DNA test results. So I watched that, but also against... You know, listen, I sometimes self-harm. I do. I'll admit it. I'm brave. I watched the entire season. I finished it tonight of Buying Beverly Hills on Netflix, season 2, with the Umanskis, Mauricio, and the agency, the powerhouse real estate firm that is the agency. And you guys, I got to tell you, I didn't watch season 1. And it didn't matter. I was able to keep up. I was like, oh, I get it. This is exactly like Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. It's just Mauricio's version. That is what this is. And I know we've all been saying it, but I got to tell you, after watching 10 episodes, what the hell was Bravo thinking? Like, how did that contract work? Kyle is in the first episode 3 times. Was in the episode more than she's been in some episodes of Beverly Hills in the past. But I have to tell you, like, I know Kyle says she shares a lot, but I without a shadow of a doubt, I know more about that family from watching this season of Buying Beverly Hills than I have learned in 13 seasons of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Like, you see the family in Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. You see all the daughters. You know how important they are. You know how close of a family they are. But this, you actually get conversations with the daughters. It is so bizarre, you guys, but it's all about like, there's like this darkness there too, because now they both, like the husband and the wife, Kyle and Mauricio, are both monetizing off their pain. Like, it is so bizarre. There are scenes in Aspen when the people story breaks about them separating and the kids allegedly don't know. These kids now have had to film like 2 sets of scenes dealing with their family separating. Like, not just on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, but now over there on Buying Beverly Hills, they've had to redo the same scenes, like tears, poor Portia. Like, and then you got Farrah, you got Sophia, the whole thing. And it's weird. It's like a weird version of the show Succession. They're like, who's going to take over Mauricio's spot? Mauricio's not going to be retiring for like another 20 years, but that's one of the storylines. But that's not even the storyline you care about. Like, I couldn't tell you any of the characters' names in Buying Beverly Hills, except for the Umanskis. And at times, like, Paul Nassif pops up, Faye Resnick is name dropped. I was like, oh my God, if they have that psychic from, like, he will never emotionally fulfill you, Kyle. Like, I was like, is she going to pop up? Is this going to be like everybody that we've seen on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, just with different camera lenses? It's such a dark viewing experience, even though, you know, listen, this Mauricio, he's just one of those like, listen, I'm at the top of my game. I'm selling real estate. I've got billions of dollars in sales. It's so exciting. Like, he just seems like he puts a positive spin on everything. Like, it's, you know, even the separation, it's very exciting because we both love each other. Like, he really is a good salesman. I'm like, wow, I think they're all I think they're separated, but it seems like they're all pretty happy. But the other thing that you kind of get impressed upon, and I don't know still if I can believe it or not, is that it seems like a family that doesn't talk deeply with each other about their issues. Like, they love each other dearly. They love each other so hard. But then, like, they're like, Mauricio and Kyle are having this conversation in the Aspen house, and they're like, the People magazine. And the other thing is, this is hysterical. Kyle will be like, the People magazine article came out and the girls didn't know about it yet. Well, we've been trying to keep it from the kids. We've been trying to protect them. And, you know, they didn't need to know yet. And then this People magazine article comes out, which we all knew, and it caught them by surprise. It caught the kids by surprise. And you actually genuinely, I didn't really believe it on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, but I did believe it on Buying Beverly Hills. Kyle's like, oh, well, I guess we're going to have to talk to him. Yeah, we should probably talk to him. Yeah, it's just that, like, I don't know how much they didn't need to know.
Yeah, I guess I don't know how much they need to know.
Like, Mauricio will just parrot back what Kyle says, but, like, in a positive way. Like, it's weird, you know? It's just like, well, I just think I'm trying to do something different with my life.
Yeah, you've got to try to do something different with your life.
Like, he's literally asked about Morgan Wade in, like, the second to last episode or even the last episode. And he's like, well, listen, I never asked my wife directly about Morgan. Like, I have a tendency to believe that there's nothing going on with my love being at Morgan. You know, I really believe, and I'm not going to ask her because I don't want to, you know, put her in a weird spot. Like, you're not going to ask your wife? You're not going to ask her? Like, you literally know as much as we do. Like, he's like, well, I just found that so interesting. He's like, I'm not going to ask her. I don't feel like it is my place to ask her. I don't feel like, it would be very weird. I don't want to ruin her good times, you know? Like, what is going on? I don't know. I will say, like, if you think of, like, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, I always think of it like a big, flashy Michael Bay movie. Not that this is, like, an independent film, like, version. Not that this is, like, you're really getting a character study. But you do see more intricacies. You do get to see how these kids are. And the other interesting thing is Farrah is engaged in this. And by the end, she is not engaged. And at one point, Farrah literally says to her friend in Buying Beverly Hills, she says, listen, you know, he's trying right now and he wants this, but I just don't know if he's going to be able to love me the way in which I want to be loved and what I really want. And it was almost exactly what Kyle said this season. And I was like, Farrah, Farrah, have you ever thought about talking to your mom about this? It seems like you're going through similar things. But you almost get the sense that they don't talk at all. You're like, Kyle's going to watch this and go, oh my God, I thought that this year too. It's weird. It is such a weird viewing experience. Like, I recommend it, but kind of. Like, it's definitely better than Selling Sunset. Selling Sunset, I always say, it's like watching the X-Men. Like, if you saw any of these, if you went to buy a home and then you literally had this person, like, one of the Selling Sunset casts showing the home, you would be like, oh my God, are we being invaded? Is this like an alien attack? Because they're just dressed like mutants. Like, just really gorgeous mutants. And Buying Beverly Hills, really attractive people too, but it's just weird. And there's just too many, like, you hear the word culture too much. Like, the culture here at the agency is some of the most fantastic cultures that I've ever seen. I've never been around a culture. The culture, it's very good. We don't like assholes. We like to have fun. That's the culture of the agency. We like to have a good time. It's a very good culture. It's culture this and culture that, culture club, da, da, da. So many different sentences with the word culture in it regarding the agency throughout the course of the second season. But it's just a weird viewing experience because we watched Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. So it's just so different. And I'm just so disappointed in a sense because no matter how Bravo positions it, I feel like, why did you let Mauricio do this? Well, I mean, did Mauricio try to sell this show to Bravo at first and they already had million-dollar listings, so they said no? Because I really would have loved to have kept this in the Bravo family. It just seems like more, not tons more, but more is definitely being shared. And it almost makes Real Housewives of Beverly Hills seem that much more fake. You know, that's the thing too. There's another scene where Kyle's like, you know, after they talk to the girls about the, you know, the People magazine, she's like, I got to go back to LA because they're in Aspen to film. They're going to pick back up cameras. And they're like, and the kids are like, what? They're going to pick back? Yeah, that's what they have to do for things like this. And one of the daughters is like, well, who are you going to film with? And Mauricio's like, yeah, I would like to know that as well. Who are you going to film with, Kyle? And of course, I think that was like the Erica Jane scene potentially. But it's so weird because they're having this conversation. And the whole time I'm thinking, it's being fucking filmed right now. There's a camera on you. You picked up cameras. It's just not Bravo cameras. At some point, couldn't somebody make a fucking call Bravo or Netflix and say, hey, why don't we share in the spoils of this dramatization of true horror? Like, that's the thing that's frustrating. You're like, they're talking about picking back up cameras while cameras are filming them. Like, it's so bizarre. I can't explain, but Kemosabe, the hat store in Aspen, makes an appearance. That was very special and exciting. It's just so weird. It is so weird, but I had to finish it. I didn't want to not finish it. So I watched 10 episodes of that. So you can just imagine how my weekend went. And speaking of, and I didn't get to talk about this with Kempire, but remember, if you want to hear him right now, skip to the timestamp. I don't fault you. Christine Quinn talking about Selling Sunset. Christine Quinn, who was a founding member of the Selling Sunset crew before she didn't get asked back for a season, man, she is going through it. Did you see this? Started happening at the end of last week. Her husband got arrested twice in 33 hours after a domestic violence incident. So there's a trigger warning for domestic violence, folks. This really is horrible. Her husband, her husband, Christian Richard, which we saw their marriage on the show. He got arrested for domestic violence. He threw a bag with glass, with a glass bottle in it. He was aiming for Christine Quinn, but it missed and hit their toddler. Now, the cops showed up and got him out of the house. And you see pictures of this. He's in a bathrobe. And I got to tell you, every time I see this guy, it looks like he's lost 10 more pounds. Like, I remember first seeing him and he wasn't like chunky, but he was like a little thick, you know. And every time, like, it just seems every time I've seen him since, he's lost more weight. And the picture in the bathroom just made him look so creepy. And I got to tell you, you are a real creep if you're fucking doing DV and then you hit a toddler. How, like, gross. But anyways, the cops showed up, took him away, and then the next day, the cops swarmed the house after they received calls about safety concerns. So with their guns drawn, the cops arrested Christian for a second time, and Us Weekly is reporting that Christine's next move is plotting a divorce, which, yeah, you got to look at these pictures. This guy, it does not, I mean, like any guy in a bathrobe already looks a little iffy, but it just, he has these glasses on, you can see his chest hair, he's not wearing shoes. And I'm sure more information will be, you know, coming out about this. And Christine Quinn is one of those big characters in terms of reality TV. She's just, you know, she was considered a reality show villain at one point. I'm curious if they'll have her back on Selling Sunset, but I'm also curious if Selling Sunset can handle this kind of serious topic in a delicate way. I mean, they have handled things with Chriselle, and you have the Chriselle and G Flip, and I don't know, but it's always such a glossy way that show is edited and put together that I would be curious how they will handle this. But, you know, thoughts and prayers go out to Christine. God, thoughts and prayers. They go out to Christine Quinn. This just seems like a horrifying situation, and that there is a child involved, that just really breaks your heart, right? Breaks your fucking heart, man. Okay, so we had that happening. So a lot of really horrible things happening in real estate. Christine Quinn and buying Beverly Hills season 2. So that happened. I was just talking to my friend who's getting married in October, and there is so much to plan. You gotta do the food, you gotta do the food tasting, you gotta book the venue, talk about the DJ, and then not to mention all of the emotion that goes into this. And then all the while you're like, ooh, what would I do if I had a wedding? I've been a part of a lot of weddings over the years, and it's an incredibly stressful process. You go from this newly engaged bliss to overwhelmed by invitation paper and flower colors in the blink of an eye. So using Zola helps with wedding planning from start to finish, and it makes every decision easier so you can stay in your bliss. With Zola, you can plan your entire wedding in one convenient place. From the day you get engaged and search for the venue to the day you send out your save the dates, make your registry, and even taste that delicious cake. Zola has literally everything you need to make the whole process super easy and actually enjoyable. There's even a 5-star app that helps you plan on the go or on your couch. Zola helps couples plan the wedding they really want with tons of unique features and personalized recommendations based on a couple's preferences. Every Zola wedding is as unique as the couple planning it. They've thought of everything you'll need and have built every tool to get you to I do, including customized checklists to get you moving, keep you on track, and prepare you for what's next. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So, the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Also, The Valley and Vanderpump Rules. I did recaps on both. I was my first recap of The Valley. I hope you guys liked it. Do you want me to keep going with it? Oh, man. Jax is back. Did you see that video of Jax and Tom Sandoval singing karaoke together? I think it was the I want it that way. Tell me why. I can't cheat on my wife. Tell me why Rachel doesn't want to talk to me. Why does she have a podcast that reveals so much information about me? That was just an original song. Just made it up right now. That is called talent, folks. If you're an agent or a manager, call me. The Valley did pretty good at the ratings. I'm really excited to see the second and the third episode. Hopefully they can build on that. If you get a good second and third episode, I truly believe this could be a nice little show, you know? And it was it was refreshing to watch after the misery that I feel every week watching Vanderpump Rules, even though we do find some humor in it. But yeah, Sandoval and Jax at Jax's Saloon were singing karaoke together. Like, it was just like hell's frozen over, man. Like, it's just imagine that group of guys, you know, and it was weird. Like, it looked like Tom had like a sparkly microphone. Like, does he carry his own microphone with him now? Because I just don't imagine Jax like pitching in the money to have that nice of a microphone at Jax's Saloon, but you never know. So they're out just having the time of their lives. I don't even know what to think. I mean, I'm still just so creeped out by that pool scene in Vanderpump Rules. Like, wait, hey, dude, you ever been the Burning Man, dude? Hey, you ever date a guy with a pool? Yeah, I can go into this pool anytime I want. That's water, dude. I can swim at midnight if I want to, dude. Totally. Rachel Levis, the artist formerly known as Raquel, went on her podcast this week and revealed all of the people that she thinks knew about their relationship. There were people like Max Boyens, the old manager of TomTom, who got fired after, was that season 9? He was there. Season 9 or season 8? Yeah, he supposedly is one of the people that drank with them. And Max Boyens posted on Instagram of like, good God, are we still fucking talking about this? That was his response. Logan Cochran, Ariana's best friend. Now, I'm friendly with Logan. I've known him for a very long time. That guy's a stand-up guy. He also posted in his stories about this. He wrote, So Rachel suggested I knew about the affair on her podcast today. First, no, I did not know. Second, I don't believe in lying to my friends or withholding important information from them. I believe they should know. Maybe that works for some others, but not me. My friendship with Ariana is very near and dear to me, and I will protect it at all costs. I share everything with her, the good, the bad, and yes, even what Rachel mentioned on her podcast today. That said, my perspective at the time was not that those two people were up to anything nefarious. The incident Rachel recounted today was such a non-event to me at the time, not because I knew or was complicit. Come on, y'all, they even invited me into their weird little cuddle puddle after I walked into the room. But because I wasn't close at the time with the people casting doubt and making others question everything. I just thought we were all good friends. I learned the same day Ariana did. Now please go rogue elsewhere. And that is something that I want to bring up, is that, like, just because, you know, Rachel can believe whatever she wants. That's her prerogative. And I firmly, you know, say whatever you want, girl. I think it is going to get a little confusing because in the court papers, you say that production knew, and you're still going to have to prove that. You're still going to have to prove that. So maybe that'll be the next podcast episode. I don't know how you're just dripping and drolling this information out over many episodes, but that's your right. But you are now suing in a court of law, and you are bringing up these things, and you're going to have to prove them. But I also will say, with that group of people, they all, like, listen, when I was at Coachella with all of them, they were all laying all over each other. I swear to God, I didn't think it was something weird. I just thought, like, oh, we're all fucked up. Like, you know, like, it wasn't that thing. I know people really still want, with everything in their power, to believe that everybody knew, but I just beg people to think about their own lives, their own messed up situations. Like, Tom literally had me, like, try to get me on his shoulders during a concert, which would have just, like, broke his neck, I would imagine. Like, he was, like, hugging and get, like, I don't know. I could imagine a world in which Logan would not think that was nefarious. In fact, what I will say, just standing up for Logan, that dude's always been a stand-up guy. He's always told the truth, even when it actually hurts. He's a lot like Ariana. That's why I always do speak highly of Ariana, because I've seen her in situations where she has been a stand-up person. But everybody believe whatever they want to believe, you know? But I do think it's funny. It's like, you have Tom Sandoval here, a proven liar, but people still want to find ways. And the only other thing I get concerned about with Rachel's podcast, and I'm glad that she's getting stronger and things of that sort, but I do notice, over the last couple of episodes, it seems like she's sometimes divorcing the fact that she was an active part of this, you know, like, there is the grooming and the accusation of that. But at some point she does know, and she does admit that this was something that she was an active participant in. And, you know, there is something different if somebody walks in on you, and then there is a difference of that and having a full conversation with somebody of going, this is what's happening. This is where in the first episode, she talks about the person she did have that conversation with. You know, there was a person, but she wasn't having those with Logan. She wasn't, maybe they could have assumed, like, I have a feeling Max Boyens probably was like, I don't know, Tom's pretty creepy. Anything could be possible. Who knows, right? Who knows? But your Monday morning quarterbacking, and she has the right to do that because that's her life. But you also are putting out this for a mass audience, so you're going to get a lot of questions. You're also going to get a lot of blowback, which I think she is used to at this point. So it'll be interesting to see where she goes from here. But, you know, people will respond to these things. And on that, you know, a little bit of good news. Can we actually fucking call it good news for once, please, instead of everybody just bitching and moaning about it? This happened right after I talked to Kempire today. I wish he was on so I could have talked about it with him, because we did talk about Vanderpump Rules. Was that Ariana, I hope everybody's fucking happy now. Sorry for all the language. But she finally bought a house. She bought a $1.6 million bachelorette pad in the Hollywood Hills, folks. And I posted this on Instagram, and I said, I hope everybody's happy now, because everybody's been so up her butt about move out. You got to move out. Why are you still there? Well, she did it. She moved out. I hope everybody's happy, but they're not. I literally posted this, and then they go to the comments. There's people arguing of, like, well, that's a pretty big home for a single person. Like, that's like kind of a family home. Or, like, well, this price or that price. Like, listen, I don't fucking know about prices. Like, I don't have a house. Like, listen, I'll never own a house in my life, probably. Like, so, you know, I just found it funny that I was like, man, one thing, can't we just be happy? And people were just fighting in the arguments of, like, good, Tom's, like, had to pay for everything. Like, once again, you're believing somebody that's a liar. The only other thing I will say, and it just sounds like I'm standing up for her all the time, but I feel like I enrage sometimes, because it's like, what? is that she's told us every step of the way everything that she's going to do. She told us and producers last season that she was not going to do a scene with Tom Sandoval. She told us, told us, told us. She also said, I will move out when I'm able to find a house and have money to buy that house. And now she's done it. She's done everything that she said. Everybody wants to make her into a villain, including her own castmates. But she's always been upfront. And now people are out there writing, word on the street is that she potentially is a diva. You know what? If she's a diva, she's not that good at it. Because real divas are people like Lala. And I don't even mean that as a negative connotation. I mean that as like, sometimes Lala is a proud diva. Like she'll fucking, Lala today, this is what she did. She went out there, I don't know, she chose violence today again after a week of choosing violence. I don't know what happened to Lala this week, but it seems like she's on a full court press PR-wise. She was on Jeff Lewis, she was on The Talk, you know, and I know Bravo reps were there. So like they are agreeing to let her do these things, which I'm so curious about why that is all happening. I just don't personally understand that. So they truly believe in Lala as a star. And I think she is a star to some degree. I really do. But in her Instagram stories, I think it was like a Q&A thing on her Instagram. It says, because on Watch What Happens Live with Katie, Andy hinted that you two aren't cool with each other. And she put a picture of herself and she wrote, I'm sure if I go back to being miserable, we'll get real thick again. And then in the parentheses says, contemplated not posting this because I love her mom. Sorry, Ter. Speaking about the precious, amazing Terry Maloney. But like, Lala, why did you do that? Why? Like, you just now all of a sudden, like, Katie's miserable. And if I choose to be miserable again one day, I'll hang out with her. Like, why do that? That to me is diva behavior. Has Ariana ever done that? Has Ariana just randomly one day put up a picture of Lala and goes, this girl better shut her fucking yap. She's got to choose which way to go. Is she like best friends with the, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, Ariana doesn't do that. And at this point, I almost wish she would, because it's like people are going to think she's a villain regardless. But then you have real people out there doing things like this, or even Sheena to a way lesser degree and more like, you know, like, oh, you know, this is about me. This is about me. Like, this is like the stuff. And by the way, you know, that kind of behavior makes reality TV amazing to watch and fascinating sometimes. But it is frustrating because I'm like, that's the behavior. That's the diva behavior. Ariana's out there doing like two shows on a Sunday of Chicago, finally bought a house, and I still people tearing her apart in the comments. That's wild. So we'll talk more about that, because remember, this show is every day. It's an ongoing conversation, because I have a lot more to say about all of this, but I want to get to the guests. And I just did an hour and a half Patreon Q&A, and we're going to be doing a live Patreon tomorrow at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Monday, 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. $5 a month gets you access to all episodes. And now there are like 450 episodes that I've never released on the main feed, plus access to the live, the hour and a half Q&A that I did that I just finished up, where I go way more into this, actually, what we just talked about, plus a lot of other stuff. I'm going to be on Jeff Lewis Live this morning with Justin Martindale. It'll be fun to talk about. It's Jeff Lewis's birthday today. Happy birthday, Jeff. I know you don't listen, but maybe some of the other chumps do. Hello, chumps. I'm excited to hear what he did over the weekend. And I talked a little bit about that on the Patreon. So go on over there if you want to. And lastly, and I talked about this on the Patreon as well, Kate Middleton, and I talk about this with Kempire. This isn't what we talked about, so I will mention this, is that, you know, with the video, I'm like, I hope she heals. Obviously, very bad situation. My issue is with the firm, with the royal family, with how they've handled things throughout the ages that has been well documented. And they seem to make it worse for themselves instead of better. And they're like the number, like they should have access to the best PR people in the world. And yet they still make these really horrible mistakes. And I listen to a lot of you guys and we're like, well, it's because of the kids. And I understand all of that. But then when Kensington Palace takes over, they're not doing Kate any favors, even if it is for her kids. They made it much, much worse. But my thing is, and this is where I call it a day, is that that video came out, what, on Friday? And I was like, oh man, that's wild. I wish her well. I really do. I wish her well. And then today I wake up, there's all these TikTok videos. Why Kate Middleton's video was fake. AI was used in the park bench. Look at her eye. Guys, I'm tapping out of this one. Like, I wish all the internet detectives well out there. I think she's sick. I think I'm going to go with that. I really, really hope she gets better and fights this. I know she has a lot of love out there. I hope for her kids' sakes and everything. But Yeah, the internet is wild. We are savages sometimes, myself included. But man, it is so frustrating to read because I'm just like, guys, can we just one thing be real? Can one thing just be real? Oh, I have so many other things to talk to you about. So promise you'll come back tomorrow because I have some guests from Summer House Martha's Vineyard coming on. And then we'll get to talk more about pop culture because I have so much more to share with you. So promise me you'll come back. Promise me. Promise. Do it for me, you old rhino. Come on. Anyways, I love you guys. That's real. That's one thing that's real. My love for you guys and my love for our guest today. He is the one, the only. I hope I get to talk to him somewhere down the line. I'm going to put the links to his show, to his YouTube, to his live shows. I felt very privileged to be able to talk to him. I think he's just great. And he has a beautiful voice, too. My God. The one, the only, Kempire. Folks, welcome to your week. This is So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. This is your pal, Ryan. And this is your pop culture roundup. We are doing the week all over again. It is Monday. That means the week is whatever you want to make of it. It's good right now. We usually give up by Wednesday, but Monday, we are full of hope. We are vim, vigor, all of that good stuff. And today, I couldn't be more excited because we have a legend. I tried to get this person on years ago, and I didn't even know how to get I'm telling you, I am so excited for this guest because he has been doing it and doing it at a level that nobody else is doing it out there. He is the one, the only, Kempire. Kempire, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
I mean, how long have you been doing this now?
I mean, technically, I did Kempire Radio years ago, and that's when I interviewed Oprah, and that's when I interviewed people like Brandy, Brian McKnight, and all these years ago. But I think I really found my stride during the pandemic. So in the last 3 or 4 years is really where I quit my corporate job, and here I am with you.
Yeah, that's not the best to be here with me, Kempire, but like, what is it like though to not, you can never have these plans for your life. You know, You would never think you would be doing this full time. When did that become that reality where you're like, wow, anything is possible at this point?
Yeah, I think this year will mark 3 years since I quit my job. Come October, it'll be 3 years since I quit my corporate job. And I was in my corporate job for like 15 years. So I think, especially as a tourist, I'm sort of like very practical. So I really iron out, okay, will I be able to pay my mortgage? Will I be able to pay my bill? Will I still be able to vacation? I think I can do it. I think I can do it. I don't know how I did it because normally I probably like, no, I need my good health care.
Yeah.
All this good stuff. But no, so far, so good.
Well, now you're doing live shows. Like, what do you expect out of a Kempire live show? Because you guys, I'm going to put in the show notes, every one of his links and all of that stuff, because, you know, you can go to his YouTube, you can go to his website, you can go like, what do we expect out of a Kempire live show?
Well, I've been excited about doing the live shows because when I went to London, I did like a very impromptu meetup with folks that are subscribed in London. And I said, you know, I really wanted to do something official where you come to a show and I entertain you. So it's similar to what we do on YouTube or on TikTok. However, it's a little bit more explicit. And we call it Kempire. Yeah, we call it Kempire After Dark because we are able to forget about community guidelines and rules. We get into all kinds of conversation from the hot topics to reality television. It's a very different experience. And the great thing about it, every show is so different because we're covering whatever is happening at the moment. So it's been really cool. I've been loving it.
Okay, so you are like a prince of pop culture. And I am a purveyor of pop culture, and I feel like this is something I grew up loving. Little kid in Kansas, I was just drawn to this at all times. Where does your love come from? Like, why is this something that you're like, this, I'm just drawn to this at all times?
I don't know. To be honest with you, I think it's been my obsession in regards to understanding people and why people do what they do. And I think that's part of the reason why I got really into reality television when that was first created with The Real World. So ever since then,
that was your entrance point, Real World?
Oh, yeah. Real World was definitely my entrance point into reality television. But even before then, I've just always been very interested in entertainment and in the music industry. I have a history of working in the music industry as well. So I've always been very in tune to what's been going on in pop culture. So it, for me, this felt like a natural progression. Even when we did Kenpire Radio, we were talking about similar topics. We actually talked a little bit about reality television because it was very new then. So I've been, ever since I was a kid, I've always been very much obsessed with pop culture and what's going on in pop culture and gossip.
And has your love for it changed? Because sometimes I feel the more I talk about this, sometimes you learn how the sausage is made. You get to see the darker side of things. You know, the magic that you once saw the real world with as a kid, it sometimes dissipates as you get older and, you know, you see a lot of the other things happening. You know, we're going to talk about Wendy Williams in a second. You know, and sometimes the magic, it gets lost for me in certain moments. Does that ever happen for you?
I think especially when it comes to reality television, that portion of what I cover has really changed. I think I've always had an idea of how entertainment and the music industry worked. So I'm not completely surprised. I think the Diddy of it all kind of just confirmed all the rumors we've been talking about and covering for years. But I think reality television, because it's supposed to be sort of this thing they put on television for entertainment, even though we know it's supposed to be reality, I think because I've gained so much knowledge about the behind the scenes and meeting some of these people, it sort of has, it definitely has changed my perspective. Sometimes it's made me tired of talking about certain particular shows. And then there's certain shows that just reinvigorate. Like, I don't know if you've been watching The Traitors. That has...
Yes, Kenpire. That made me fall. I just said that last week. I said, it's just such a... It was such a joy. It was such a joy to come there every week. And it made me reappreciate reality stars that I had written off.
Which ones?
Well, yeah, I mean, listen. I have now, like... the Atlanta with the Phaedra stuff. But I got to tell you, over the last few years... through Ultimate Girls Trip to begin with, and then moving into Traitors and Married to Medicine, I'm in love with her again. I'm deeply in love with Phaedra again.
I have to say, Ultimate Girls Trip and Married to Medicine, it didn't sell Phaedra for me. It was because those shows are about your personal story, and she's not willing to give that. So I'm just sort of like, okay, whatever. But on Traitors, because we don't care about your personal story, it's about the game. I enjoyed her in Traitors. I need her just to come back there. Ultimate Girl, Married to Medicine, I don't care.
I love that. Phaedra to me has this, and I know this is such a weird example, like a Liberace quality. It's like such an elevated character. It really is a showman. Like we laugh about showmen on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, you know, but like Phaedra to me, like it just, she makes me laugh. The words come out of her mouth, the speeches. She also, I'm scared of her a little bit. Like those things all make like one glorious person for reality TV. But I love the Married to Medicine and Ultimate Girls Trip didn't do it for you. But to me, it just reminded me I do think, and I wonder if you, I know we're hopping all over the place. Do you think we'll ever have that reckoning or moment between her and Candy, because we know Candy is not going to be on Atlanta this season? We really had a cast shakeup. And you know, there were rumors that maybe Phaedra would be put back into Atlanta, but they're keeping her on Married to Medicine. Do you think we would ever see that? Do you think Phaedra will ever really let that be an honest moment?
No, because Phaedra, the truth ain't in that bitch, as Dr. I didn't say it. That was Dr. Heavenly. I'm just quoting Dr. Heavenly.
Phaedra, that was Kenpire. I just want to make sure if you're listening, that was Kenpire.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think we ever will see that between her and Candy. I think Candy is done with Phaedra. I think she's been done with Phaedra. Part of the reason why, if we do see Phaedra on this Real Housewives of Atlanta reboot, it will be because Candy's no longer there. If Candy was still there, I don't believe we would ever see Phaedra back on there. But I don't think we're ever going to get that closure that we need in regards to what Phaedra did to Candy on the show.
Yeah, that's a shame. That's the one thing that every time I deeply fall more in love with Phaedra, I have to remember that moment happened, you know, and then I have to remember. And it's so interesting. And that almost makes me want to know what makes Phaedra tick? Like, what is the reality of that situation? Because Candy, I mean, like such an OG, she's done so much now, producer on Broadway, all of these amazing things that have happened in her career. And she, to me, even throughout all of this, still seems like a very real person to me. Yeah. Phaedra seems like a Marvel superhero. It's like a difference, or a Marvel villain at times, you know?
And I think she should lead into that. She should lead into that personality trait. But her trying to share a life of on Married to Medicine and them constantly going back to Real Housewives of Atlanta. We didn't need Apollo on this last part of that reunion.
What was that all about? Like, I mean, and then Andy hugging Apollo. Like, we don't need to be hugging Apollo. Like, I get it. I mean, it's part of history, but come on. That was weird.
Yeah, that was her last effort to secure her position on the show, even though we hear she has like a 3-year contract. However, she knew she had to bring something, and Apollo was that something. But even the Apollo appearance fell flat for me.
Isn't it weird when we have to monetize our personal pain and failures in life?
That's reality television, unfortunately.
I know. That's the name of the game. And I was going to, like, well, I'll ask you this. In terms of covering pop culture for so long and loving it for so long, and I guess coming off the week in which we finally got the, you know, what the truth of Kate Middleton right now.
Yeah.
And we have turned not only pop culture, TV, film, music, movies, pop culture. We've also turned true crime into pop culture. And also the royals are pop culture. You know, like, we have turned all of these things that maybe once were not considered that into pop culture. What in your mind is the state of pop culture? And do you sometimes find now that hate is such a huge thing in pop culture now that it once wasn't like that?
Well, here's the thing. The royal family, even growing up, as someone that has loved pop culture since I was a kid, okay? The royal family has always been a part of that. Has always, at least for my generation, they have been a part of pop culture, the gossip. I feel like, if anything, the interest in them sort of waned for a period of time after Princess Diana passed away. This whole Kate Middleton situation, I'm literally just getting into the nitty gritty of all the speculation. It's unfortunate that she felt forced to come out and speak out, even though people still don't believe that this is her. They say this is AI.
I know. It was so great. It was like, finally, like, the video comes out yesterday. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's it, obviously. And I was more like, I was more kind of weirded out by the firm and how they handled this whole, how they PR bungled this mess. But I was like, okay, that's a real woman going through a real thing, real family. God bless her. Oh my God, I hope she's strong and get through this. And then literally within 10 hours, I see these articles. Was that truly her voice? And I was like, no, let's stop this right now.
And they also were saying, why wasn't Prince William by her side during this announcement? I mean, that to me stood out to me.
Yes. Well, I mean, so it never really ends. It never ends. Our curiosity. And the only difference from when I was growing up to now, though, is that, like you said, we always thought that way, or you always thought that way about the royal family. We just didn't have social media. We didn't have our voices the way we do now. And I'm always like a big freedom of speech guy. But sometimes in 2024, I'm like, do we all need it? Do we all deserve it? Should we all have it? Like, I mean, because you go on Twitter or X or whatever it is, and it is just, man, it's turned my beard white. Like, I'm just like, it'll scare the shit out of me sometimes that I'm like, this much negativity on top of this much stupidity. And I don't mean with this in particular, but you'll just read the stupidest comments where you're like, you're not even putting two and two together here.
No, there was some stupidity. At one point, they were saying that they believe that Kate Middleton had a BBL, and that's part of the reason why.
Could you imagine?
I'm like, okay.
Like, could you imagine if that was it? She pops up, and you're like, it's a way fuller figure, and you're like, we knew it.
Shock me in this day and age, because that happened with Madonna. I did not expect it from Madonna. After all Madonna has done.
Oh my God. I remember seeing that one picture going, oh my God, that was wild.
Look. Okay. I didn't believe the BBL Kate Middleton rumors, but it wouldn't have shocked me if she came out and all of a sudden we see that she had a little bit more something back there.
The discourse around it is like, you know, because I 100% believe, like, and still, she didn't tell us exactly what she is going through, nor do I feel like she needs to. But obviously, this is somebody going through something. Like, I without a doubt, I believe that. But what is interesting is that people are so sensitive and ready to anger these days with anything that you argue with. I made a joke yesterday where just like, well,
Glad the royal family got ahead of this one. And, you know, because they hadn't, they put grainy photos out there, weird videos. They did all of these things. And this, you would imagine, one of the most powerful families in the entire, you know, world, that they would have the number one PR people on this and tell them what to do. And they still managed to bungle this poor woman's health scare or whatever she's going through. And what I made this joke, and people were literally still like thinking I was talking about her. I'm not talking about her. I'm talking about the institution. And also people act like Kate just stumbled upon in this family and she does not know what this family's about. At this point, after going through Princess Diana, Meghan Markle, you know, like they know what is, they know the deal. They know this institution has been riddled with insanity, deception, not to sound like somebody from The Traitors, Duchess of Deceptions, you know, like, you know, they've been riddled with people that have like done horrible, horrible things in this family, trying to pull the wool over their countries and the world's eyes. So it shouldn't be as surprising for people when other people question the royal family.
Yeah.
Do you feel that way?
I do. And you're right. I feel as if the firm, as you refer to them, I haven't heard that terminology since the Oprah interview with
that's like, where I got it. That's where I
But it made you look at the family a little differently. Like, okay, what exactly is happening over at there at the royal family? I believe they still feel as if this is the 1980s, early 90s, and that's how they're conducting their PR, unfortunately. But there are a lot of celebrities that are still conducting their PR very much like they are still stuck in the 80s and the 90s. And it's a whole new age. And a lot of fans, here's the thing too, I think they realize no matter what they say or do, people are going to continue to speculate. But the fact that we had this Photoshop photo, they then said, you know, this is not, you know, she was playing with editing. And then they had these little stints of seeing her, but people still did not believe that it was her. And she felt, and it's unfortunate, she felt forced to reveal something that she probably doesn't even want to speak out loud. And I felt for her in that moment. But where was Prince William by her side? Like, I would have expected him to at least sit by her side during this moment.
Well, I mean, that is, I really didn't even think about that. But now I'm mad about that. But like, it is, it's one of those things too, though. It's like, can you imagine this very real thing happening and the firm bungles PR so badly that people start talking about, like, remember when your husband cheated with Lansbury lady? And like, now you have to relive every bad thing that you've done up to that point. And that's when, and I know like we shouldn't feel bad for celebrities and things of that nature and people of state, but I mean, you do sometimes feel bad if like this is what's actually going on, and we dredge their entire histories every time something happens.
Why shouldn't we feel bad for them? They're human like we are.
That's the misconception, is that we all believe, like we all believe any, the other big belief is if you're an actor, you're a billionaire. You know, it's like, I started off as an actor. Like, I couldn't even afford my rent. Like, you know, it's like, if you have one line on a TV show, you are not a millionaire or a billionaire. I mean, so I think people assume that they live in such a glorious, different life than we do, that they don't have any of the issues that we do.
Yeah. I think the great thing about reality television and a lot of the actors and the entertainers that are getting into the reality TV space, people are starting to see them a little bit more human, a little bit more human. But I think we do need to remember that. And people need to be held more accountable with some of the things that they say on social media, because people are making death threats and all kinds of things. And I'm just like, you know, you could go to jail for something like this, right?
I don't think people know that in the political system we're in now, I think people feel like we can do anything at any time and get away with it. So it's a real, and it's, I mean, just, man, this year is going to keep getting nuttier and nuttier. Like, this is just the tip of the iceberg, and I'm so scared for it. Okay, so Kate, we hope you get better. I hope people leave you alone to a certain degree and just let you rest and heal. And, you know,
right now.
What's that?
She's in chemotherapy. Leave
exactly. Exactly. You had mentioned two people at the beginning of this that, first off, I just want to know what it's like to be around Oprah. Oprah is somebody that's meant so much to me throughout my life. Like, my first diet I ever did was based on Oprah's first book she released with her trainer. What was his name? Trainer. That was the first time, and I was 17 years old, and I yo-yo in weight, and she was the first person to inspire me to try to get healthier. Was Oprah, and she means so much to me.
with what she came out with.
With the Ozempic? Listen, yeah. I personally am like, whatever makes you happy with that stuff. Like, I feel also what, you know, she's of a certain age. This seems her body and her mental image or her, you know, the way she views herself has always been so important, but she's put it into words where it almost seems like poetic. It's like Toni Morrison speaking. I'm like, yeah, you know, like, you know, do Oprah Zempic and I'll buy it. Like, I just, listen, I want Oprah to be happy. She's given me enough that I'm good with whatever. But yeah, she spoke at the GLAAD Awards 2 weeks ago. Yeah. And she looked fabulous. She even did a one photo shoot where they lifted up her dress and it looked like she had a flat stomach and people lost their minds. But what was it like sharing space or sharing a time or having a conversation with Oprah? What is that like?
Well, honestly, I didn't share space with her. She called into then when it was just Kempire Radio. She called into our platform because we were talking about it was at the early years of OWN. And she had did an interview with the Kardashians and she was receiving a lot of criticism back there for doing an interview with them because people were like, what are they famous for? This is before, you know, they became billionaires. But so honestly, it felt like I had been preparing for that moment. I didn't expect that moment to happen then, honestly. But it felt natural because she is such a stellar talker and an interviewer, it didn't feel like I had to do much of anything. That's the great thing about, and I'm sure from you interviewing folks, the best interviews are those that come to play. She always comes to play. So it was a very easy conversation. And that for me is always the goal. You never want it to be sort of like question, answer. You want it to feel as if it's a conversation.
Yeah.
That she's the master at doing that. So it felt very easy, very easy. But like I said, I didn't know that was going to happen. And that happened, oh my gosh, over a decade ago. We had that conversation.
Did you feel like in some way anointed? Did you feel, even though she wasn't anointing you in some way, I feel like if anybody talks to Oprah, they're anointed in some way. It's like a Holy Spirit.
I don't know if I felt anointed, but I did feel as if in that moment, I was like, okay, is this the moment? Is this the moment? Am I going to get a show on OWN? I even asked her for one when she called in. It's like, so you're going to give me a show? Nope, that didn't happen. But I kept on pressing forward. And literally in between that time, it was years that passed. But I don't know if I felt anointed, but it did for me say, who do I want to interview next? After you interview Oprah, like there are people that I have conversations with and celebrities that I've interviewed, but it sort of, it pales in comparison.
Yeah.
There really isn't anyone that I can think in off the top of my head where like, oh, I want to interview that celebrity. Every day, folks, when people call into my YouTube channel, those conversations are pretty interesting and poignant. But when it comes to interviews of celebrities I want to interview next, after you've interviewed Oprah, it really is kind of hard. Like there are people that would be, you know, there are legends and icons, but like she's a great conversationalist, like I said. So some of these other celebrities, you just never know what you're going to get.
Yeah. Well, that's what when people like when I talk to a Real Housewife or something like that, it's like a mixed bag, you know, like it's like I'm excited and the, you know, people listening are excited. But sometimes it's not anything, you know, a knock on them at all. It's just sometimes not the best conversation in the world. And you're geared towards certain talking points. And so when I get to talk to somebody like you or I get to, you know, I used to like I grew up listening to call-in radio. Like to me, that's the exciting part of like trying to that roller coaster of whatever that live caller is going to do. But yeah, you're dead on right. I wanted to speak about Wendy Williams too, because I just read an article. I mean, I watched that entire 4-part docuseries that came out on, Lifetime a couple of weeks ago. And I think like a lot of us were horrified. I was horrified. Not just by her state at times, but the fact that this was able to be put out at all. Whereas Wendy Williams, I thought was a very painful watch, even though they still argued that it was trying to have her take back her narrative. But to me, I just didn't understand, even if you got paid all the money in the world, which we now found out she got paid $400,000. I'm still not understanding. I know her son is was an executive producer. The manager was an executive producer, but then the person, the person in control of her person signed off on this. I don't understand. Did you what did you think of this series, and where do you land on it now, weeks later?
It was definitely a painful documentary to watch. The first two parts were okay. We're like, okay, not so bad. But the final two parts were really, they really drove home what was really going on with Wendy. According to the filmmakers that did an interview with the Hollywood Reporter, they're saying that they had no idea that Wendy had the dementia diagnosis at the time of this, of this. And if they had known, they wouldn't have filmed her. You know, Will Selby, her jeweler turned manager, and her then publicist, Sean Zanotti, all said that they felt as if Lifetime and the filmmakers exploited Wendy. But if you watch the documentary, it looks as if Will Selby and Sean Zanotti are the ones exposed Wendy. But I did feel as if this documentary and the world seeing this documentary was necessary, because now we are looking at The Guardian with a microscope. Like, what's going on here? Why is Wendy owing a federal tax lien of over $500,000 and you haven't paid that yet or taken care of that? Why is she begging you allegedly for money so she can buy food?
Yeah, there was no food in her place in the docuseries.
And the Guardian was accused several years ago by someone else for pursuing a baseless guardianship as well. This man had $5.5 million at the time. Wendy, of course, has a lot more. According to Radar Online, they're saying that she at one point had, you know, an eight-figure fortune with Wells Fargo. We don't know where that stands today.
You know, even the Sean Zanotti of it all, like, they all seem like they were using her to some degree. I mean, Sean Zanotti taking her to Los Angeles, and you and I both know to put her in a meeting with executives about her TV show, and thank God the cameras didn't show that. That is just not something you do to somebody in Wendy's state, even if you didn't have a diagnosis, if you didn't. And the other thing that I'm still curious about is that once these people did realize the diagnosis, even though they wouldn't have done it at the time, why don't you begin each one of those docuseries with a big fat chyron saying, this is Wendy Williams' diagnosis. Over these next 3 hours, you are going to see things that will show you aspects of what her diagnosis entails. So because you and I both know nowadays, like, if you put one thing out, we're going to look at that one thing. If you put out an edit somewhere down the line, only like a third of the people that saw that initial statement are going to see that. Like, they're not going to put it together. I want it. Like, she deserves that. She deserves any future airings that, like, open up with her diagnosis. Do you believe that as well?
I definitely agree. I mean, there were a lot of leeches that were around, and I know her son, it was, you know, named an executive on this documentary, but I don't think he was initially attached to the documentary in an interview that he did a few months ago. But I believe everybody benefited from this documentary. I know everyone wants to play innocent and everyone wants to throw blame. Oh, it was, you know, the Guardian. It was the manager. I think everyone on some level were trying to profit off of this because they knew people would tune in. And you saw those ratings. The ratings for the documentary set all kinds of records for Lifetime. Oh.
Well, I watched it day and date. I was really excited to watch it. I mean, I immediately was sad while watching it, but I kept watching it. Like, that's that thing. I want to see that. Also, I just read an article. I'm not sure if this is true or not, that her son just got kicked out of another apartment for failure to pay rent. So it seems like there are money issues abound. But I think guardianship in this country, you know, you saw it. And of course, there's conservatorships like Britney Spears or with Erica Jane's husband, Tom Girardi. But it is interesting in somebody like Wendy Williams, and then they're doing this docuseries. I'm wondering if anything can change and if the family will eventually be able to be around Wendy like they want to be.
Yeah, because that's the important detail that I think people keep forgetting is the fact that Will Selby, her manager, and Sean Zanotti have access to Wendy, or at least did, because word on the street that she's no longer working with them. Mm-hmm. But her family doesn't know where she is, can't call her directly. They have to wait for Wendy to call them. And we're not sure as to why that is.
Yeah, that's incredibly frustrating to hear. Okay, well, now on to something completely different. Real Housewives of Orange County, Kempire. Do you follow it? Do you watch it? Do you like it?
I've recently gotten to Orange County. I've watched every single city, including Dallas, from beginning to end. Orange County was not one that I was watching. However, you know, Community was like, can you recap and watch this show? About almost three seasons ago, watching and recap and following. But like I've always sort of seen the news and things like that. So I know who's been on the show and some of the big stories that have come out from Orange County. And of course, right now I'm following because there's a lot of mess going on.
Well, this is the lot of mess coming. This John Jansen, he used to be with Shannon and now he is with Alexis Bellino, who is an OG OC housewife. And now they're together. This John Jansen wants to be a housewife so bad. He is so screaming for attention. It is really awkward to watch. Well, this week it continues because John Jansen sues his ex Shannon Bedore for $75,000, which she allegedly borrowed for a facelift. Now, this made People Magazine. This isn't just in the gossip rags. This is People Magazine reporting in exclusive. This man is suing, and Shannon Bedore, you guys, released a statement after this and wrote, I am shocked. I can just hear this in Shannon's voice. I am shocked and disappointed that John has filed a lawsuit. My attorney has been in constant communication with his counsel. I agreed to pay John what he wanted because I knew that attorney fees would surpass the amount sought, but more importantly, to eliminate the negative emotional components that come with a lawsuit. It is important that I continue to focus on the positive aspects of my life and move forward. John declined the offer because he refused to sign a mutual non-disparagement agreement. I was hoping that if I met his baseless demand, we could at least use this as an opportunity to bring complete closure to this chapter in my life, the statement concludes.
Do you think the reason why he didn't want to sign the NDA so that he could slam her during this season?
Yes! 100%! There's no way, because he's dating Alexis Bellino. Alexis Bellino is coming back on the show after not being on for many seasons. This is like a storyline served up. Listen, Shannon has made a lot of mistakes in the last year and her life, obviously. I think Shannon Bedore is a tragic figure in some ways. She ran into a literal house, got a DUI, all of these things, horrible, leaving this John Jansen's house. She's trying to pick her life back up. Tamara now is not talking to her. Tamara is like over there in Alexis Bellino's corner. So I feel like this is just going to be like a pummeling of Shannon Bedore, and she's like a very fragile emotional creature, which we've seen season in, season out. But this John Jansen, like, this could have handled like this to make this public like that, and also to put in there for facelift, I think is just the icing on the shitty cake. What do you think?
I agree. I feel for Shannon because, you know, someone that hasn't watched OC chapter and verse, but in these last three seasons of watching her, I always refer to her as like, she seems like the sweet grandmother. And that's not even a reference to age or anything. It's just something very sweet about her.
Yeah.
Of course, it was deplorable when we found out that she was driving under the
influence. Of course.
Did not like that side of Shannon. And hopefully we see that she's working towards sobriety this season. But we also know that John Jansen is trash.
Yes! Boom! By the way, that's the pull quote for this episode. We all know John Jansen is trash. Kempire.
we know it. And the fact that he's suing her for $75,000. First of all, I wouldn't be shocked if he was sort of insinuating, oh, you should get a facelift, and that he was the reason behind it. Just saying.
Yes! That's a damn perfect point. Exactly. Why do you think she wanted to get a facelift? Because John Jansen kept saying he wasn't sexually attracted to her, potentially.
Didn't want to move forward in the relationship. Didn't want to stay over. All kind. He was so terrible to her self-esteem. I wouldn't be shocked that he was the motivation for her even wanting to get this. And I thought that she would have counteracted and said, you gave me this money as a gift.
Yeah. I think it's like you don't ask for the ring back sometimes. Like I get to keep this face and you gave, this was a gift, this face.
I don't know the laws of California, but
the laws of California, you get to keep your facelift. But the other thing too, is that we also, I think Tamara said it last season on OC, is that this John Jansen likes the cameras. He enjoys being on the cameras, and those are the ones you always got to watch. Housewives are housewives. They are meant to be there. But when these house husbands, I mean, Jersey now is like half house husbands, half housewives.
Yep.
And you know what? I mean, they're in a whole other hole, but like this, like John Jansen, I think likes being, you know, one of my friends came up to him to get an autograph and you could tell he was thrilled. He was thrilled. And it's just like, come on, man.
Why did they want his autograph though?
I think just it was a very sad person. I don't know. They needed. No, I don't know. I just find this very sad. And we're obviously in the middle of filming Orange County right now. So this drops while they're filming. And I just feel like, damn, it's like, I think that's the other thing people don't realize in terms of these reality shows is that the housewives themselves, they don't know. Like, everybody's like, oh, it's staged, this and that. They don't know everything. They might know what they want to talk about, but then slings and arrows are thrown at them sometimes by other producers or other cast members that they don't know what's coming. And I just hope Shannon can, like, hang on for dear life, because I feel like she signed up knowing that she had the hot potato this season.
Yeah. It will be interesting to see how Shannon handles this. I mean, she doesn't handle conflict very well. But I'm hoping for the best. Like, I'm keeping my fingers crossed, because I don't want her, because I don't know Alexis and what she's brought over the years. She seems to be someone that a lot of people like, and they're excited for her coming back. But I don't know her, as Mariah would say. So I'm going to ride with Shannon for now.
Well, I'm riding with Shannon. And I like Alexis Bellino. But even then, even when she was on the show, they called her Jesus Jugs because her ex-husband, Jim Bellino, made her get these gigantic boobs, kind of like Jax did to Brittany in Vanderpump Rules. Mm. And so it was like that. And then it was like everything was like church related. I don't know. She was fine. She was fine. But I even went to a party a couple weeks ago for the Oscars, and a lot of housewives were there, and Alexis and John showed up together, and I was like just making the sign of the cross. I was like just cursing in tongues. It was because I was just like, they're out in public trying to, you know, and they were trying to get into conversations with like Meredith Marks and this and that. And I just, it feels like political campaigning to me sometimes.
Do you know that John is using Alexis, or they've conspired together? For
I think it's mutual conspiring that actually led to actual romance.
Oh,
I do. I do believe there is a world in which, I mean, they both. But isn't that sometimes just relationships in general? Like, that's like the main thing that keeps relationships going is attention, you know, like is like we both love attention. I think you can name many relationships on Bravo that are similar to that in a sense.
Like who? I like examples.
Well, I was perfect example right now, Kyle and Mauricio. Now, before I wouldn't have said this, but after this weekend, and I guess after this year, Kyle is OG, 13 seasons, just been there from, you know, the start to now. She loves the attention, because if not, she would have like taken a season off for one of the most painful years of her life. Mm. But what is shocking me now is Mauricio is seeming to love it just as much, if not more, than Kyle, because now I'm on episode like 6 of the second season of Buying Beverly Hills, which came out on Netflix this weekend. And this guy, I joked last night that Buying Beverly Hills is Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, Mauricio's version, kind of like Taylor Swift, because, and this Kyle Richards is in 3 scenes in the first episode alone. I am learning more about the family dynamics of the Umanskys from Buying Beverly Hills than I ever have in Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Now, some of the show is kind of unwatchable in terms of the other characters, and it's your standard real estate show of like, can we sell it? Here it is. You have to like sell to make money. Just like basic stuff that we all know that they act like is some kind of Bible on how to sell real estate. But the little in-betweens and Mauricio talking about like, listen, it turns out I don't think she loves me anymore, and that's very hurtful, but what can you do? You know, like, and that's you'll like hear those. Love Bean, come on, Love Bean, please, Love Bean. No, it's really jaw-dropping, because I get angry because Bravo is my home team. So when I feel like, why the F isn't this on Bravo? Like, that's what I kept thinking. I was like, why the, like, we got to see an awkward bed situation where Kyle and Mauricio are in the same bed, and you can tell she's like inching away from him, trying, she's like, he's like, you're gonna read your book tonight, like, you don't you know. And it was just like, I've never seen them necessarily in their bed together, and it was just those little moments. But I think what I came away from realizing this year is that Mauricio loves the spotlight just as much as Kyle, like Dancing with the Stars.
Yes,
you know,
doing little TikTok dances. I'm like, Rick Hilton
hanging out with Anita, hanging out with Anita and TikTokers and things like that. Come on. He seems like he really, and maybe that's his midlife crisis, but it seems like he is taking a page out of Kyle's book and now is craving that sort of attention for himself as well.
I mean, Howard Stern was slamming them for that scene that we got on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills with the family. It was just like, you could tell if Howard Stern's pointing it out, then I was like, okay, crazy that these.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I'm like, come on, you guys are so thirsty for the attention and you're using your children. I'm like, okay, but I shouldn't be surprised. Well, you know, it's very, you know, Holly weird.
But that's Kempire. That's it. Exactly. They open Barry in Beverly Hills with a scene that takes place in the future where it's Mauricio and all the girls. They actually released this as a clip that Netflix did. And he's like, listen, you know, we're separated. Your mom told me I can date your mom. And, you know, one of the girls is crying. And now this is the second scene we've had to see these girls crying in front of one of their family members in the last year. And my parents, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, never divorced. But I never had to cry in front of them. But I can't imagine them divorcing, but also having a camera there to capture my reaction of their divorce. There is something so weird. Even if they knew that information before the cameras went up, just to say, hey, we want this to get, we want to get this on film so everybody sees it. There's something so dark. And that's the other thing about watching it that is like this, you know, that you almost feel like you're not supposed to be watching this because it's their real family, these real girls. And we're seeing them in scenes for the first time that they're carrying themselves. And that was what I walked away with. So I kept watching, even though I don't think it's the best reality show known to man, you know, it doesn't reinvent any wheel, but that part of it. But I just wondered how the hell Bravo really did let this information over there instead of wanting it for them. And it just made me wonder how much power Kyle really has over at Bravo that she was able to only get away with sharing what she did.
Well, I know Mauricio in the Entertainment Tonight interview said that it really had more to do with the timing of how everything played out. Because you have to remember, when we found out about them officially separating, when that People magazine article came out, they had wrapped filming for Beverly Hills. However, they were just starting to film Buying Beverly Hills, and that's why they are capturing all of the fallout. However, there have been rumors about Mauricio cheating on Kyle for years and Kyle allegedly being very much aware of his cheating. But she said on the reunion that there was one thing that betrayed her trust, and we are all just sort of like, what was it, Kyle? What was it?
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing is that I feel for Kyle. I mean, I root for Kyle. Kyle's one of those magnetic people that I would hate to have Beverly Hills without Kyle. But it is interesting when you start to watch these shows so much that you think it's like this delicate dance of the housewife and the producers and what they will share and what they won't share. And it's this kind of, and you kind of see it on Vanderpump Rules this season as well of, you know, the delicate dance of trying to get Ariana to film a scene with Tom, you know, like she went in letting them know I'm not doing it. And they're like, totally, we've got your back. And now you can kind of see them trying to find ways to put Ariana near Tom. Could we potentially get that? So yeah. I think that's the other interesting thing as you know, now we have a language for watching these shows. There's a history to these shows. You started watching The Real World back in the day. I started the same way. And now we have decades upon decades. So now it's interesting that we have people that are like, oh, you know, these housewives are trying to manipulate the storyline. They're trying to produce for themselves. I'm like, back in the day, you know, we OC celebrated its 18th, you know, 18th year anniversary of when it first came on the air this week. 18 years of that, you know, from when it started. So now we have, it's a different way of how we look at these things and how the housewives look at being in them. And that for an audience member can be really weird because now there's like a 360 way of viewing these things that includes your show. Like we need Kempire's opinion. We need to go on Twitter. We need to look at the memes. We need to get on the Reddit threads. That didn't exist 18 years ago. Yeah, we got to listen to it. But like that didn't exist 18 years ago. So now we can't even really just watch what the producers are trying to tell us in terms of story. It's everything else.
Yeah. And I hear all the time people say, I don't even watch the show anymore. I watch your recap of it. I'm like,
yes.
I'm like, really? Because I feel like you have to watch the episode. Then it falls on me to make sure I'm covering every part of the episode. I have to watch
the episode. Wait, what are you sick of watching? Like, what do you hate? What do you like? Because right now for me, even though it's like my biggest, like it's like Vanderpump Rules, but I am at a place where I am in misery when I watch it for the first time each week.
That was the first show that jumped out in my mind was Vanderpump Rules. Because last season was fun to recap. But this season, especially on what they're giving us, I'm just like, I'm not interested. I'm really just doing it because I know my community wants me to talk about it. But even then, I said, no promises, guys, that I will continue.
What I tell you, I literally, it's like time to make the donuts. I feel like I'm going into a coal mine, and it's just like, and I know that's like the easiest thing in the world to do sometimes, but sometimes when you're watching this thing, it's just darkness right and left, and you're not, but that's the main thing I'm talking about. Then you have to take into account Rachel, the artist formerly known as Raquel, Rachel Levis. She has a podcast now, so you have to take that into account. You got to take the Reddit threads into account. Jax has a podcast. Jax and Brittany, you got the, like, all of these other pieces of information are filling in what we actually see on the show. So yep. That's, I think, the part of it where I'm like this weekend we got Rachel's response to, like, she said, who actually knew in their friend circle that they were hooking up? She said Tom's mom knew because they went to Christmas in St. Louis, and they didn't have a full conversation, but she did, you know, Tom did bring a girl around his mom at Christmas time. So she had to have known, you know, Ariana's friend Logan, and Logan disputes this and says, like, listen, I did see this, but we were all like fucked up. Like, I was invited to their cuddle puddle too. They were like, Tom and Rachel were cuddling in the social media room, and I've been to their house. I know what that looks like. But it's like, yeah, like, I did tell Ariana, like, I didn't keep this from her, but it was like, that's the darkness of it, is that this is still going on, but the show is only showing us what they want to show us. Yeah. And part of that is they're really trying to give Tom a leash to have a redemption season, yet he keeps fucking it up for himself by doing interviews outside of the show. What are your thoughts on Tom Sandoval's redemption season?
I haven't really labeled it his redemption season.
Oh, I do that tongue in cheek. I do that, like, because it's like, it's like, dear diary, I'm writing in my journal about what I've learned this week, you know?
Well, here's the thing. I do think that he keeps screwing it up because everyone, producers, LVP, everyone's really trying to give it. Even some of the cast are trying to give him at least a moment to at least do some self-reflection. But for me, you know, I think people overuse the term narcissist too much. But no, he is a walking definition of a narcissist. He doesn't see where
Empire. Dr. Drew said he wasn't. Dr. Drew said he wasn't, though.
Really? Really? Dr. Drew, we're going to have to go back and check your... No.
Can you believe we lived in a world where there was celebrity rehab? We lived in a world where celebrity rehab was a reality show?
Yeah.
Like, can you believe... Anyways, sorry. Yeah, you're right. Narcissist is somebody that I think is Tom Sandoval. Yeah. And so it's interesting that he continues to fight against that. And I think there's just no way that it's like, it's just interesting at no time. Like, every time he apologizes within the same scene, he gets angry at people for not apologizing to him.
I mean, here's the thing. I partially get where he's coming from, because we know that this cast of, you know, failed actors and models all wanted to grasp on this moment. And I can't blame them, because they're not going to make anything once they're off of this show. So if they can collect as much money as they can off this Scandoball, Bravo and NBC Universal made millions and are still making millions off of this. So I can't blame them. But he has a point. They were dogging him in podcasts, interviews, on social media. I get where he's coming from when it comes to how he feels towards the cast and how they were dogging him, and they took it. But he shouldn't be surprised. This is who they've been since season one, including himself.
Yeah, look at the arena in which you are in. And also, because of Tom Sandoval, we got our series premiere of The Valley. The you know, you have unleashed the demon that is Jax Taylor, Sandoval. That is because of you and you alone. Did you watch The Valley? Did your viewers make you watch The Valley?
Yes, they did. Well, no, Bravo made me watch The Valley, because it just went right into The Valley after watching it. If you watched it live, that's what exactly happened.
I know the connector scene was like Jax going, love to sit here and party with you guys, but I got a family and a kid. I'll see you guys later. And then he drives to The Valley in an Uber.
What I liked about it was it did feel like an elevation or an evolution of Vanderpump Rules, where we're seeing these couples and people from Vanderpump Rules sort of have evolved, their parents now. So it did feel a little different. I still want to give it a chance because it was only the first episode, but I thought it was sort of, it might have been because I was watching Vanderpump Rules, which has been so lackluster this season, going into The Valley. So I was sort of like, oh, here we go at the second hour. can I make it? But I want to try and watch it separately, because a lot of people have said that they've watched and they thought it was pretty good. What I did get from it was it did feel like an evolution, But I don't know. A lot of people are saying that Vanderpump Rules needs to go away after the season.
A lot of people say that, but you and me both know that will never happen because this is still raking in the advertising dollars. Like, even, and the ratings have like remained solid, not like insane like last season, but solid. So I hate to break it to everybody. These shows are made so they can sell soap. They are still selling a lot of soap, you know, and the Valley got really decent. They kept a majority of the Vanderpump Rules audience. It got bigger ratings than the Top Chef season premiere this week. Ooh. It got bigger ratings than Married to Medicine did this week. It got bigger ratings than Potomac got this week. And, you know, so those are those things that it's not even if we think it should last or not, it is going to last, period. Yeah. The Valley, though, I like that you said an evolution. And in some ways, yes, but in some ways, you still see there's a de-evolution happening because even with all the houses and the babies, there is still that internal misery and darkness, which we see with Jax Taylor, which I'm there to watch. As we start winding down here, I was meaning to bring this up when we talked about Shannon Bedore, but we got horrible news this week in regards to the Grand Dame, Karen Huger, out of Potomac. There was a wreck with her car, and you know, she got a DUI. You know, and what was your take on this? Because I dearly, dearly love Karen Huger. And I was very, very sad about this. And she did say that she came from a dinner and that she was, I think, talking about traumatic events. But what is your take on all of this?
Oh, Karen, we can love Karen and at the same time tell Karen, don't drink and drive. It was irresponsible. You need to take accountability. Stop with the, you know, my mom and my father. I think she should have waited, maybe spoke to her publicist before releasing that statement to TMZ. The photos from the car crash, she's lucky she didn't hurt herself, but more lucky that she didn't hurt someone else. We've been talking a very different story right now. At her big age, Karen, you're too cute to go to prison. Please don't, especially in this day and age. Back in the day, we didn't have Uber. You know what I mean?
I know. It's so easy now. Yeah.
You have so many options. And according to TMZ, they said the police were stating that her car reeked of alcohol.
When there were two bottles in her car.
Yeah. So it's disappointing because there's so many times that we can say, don't drink and drive, don't drink and drive. But I think the next person that's drinking and driving will end up hurting themselves or someone else. People just need to stop. Take the Uber, take the Lyft, whatever it may be. Karen, we love you, but no, this was disgusting. And your statement, not taking ownership, was even more disgusting.
Yeah, I agree with you completely, but I hope she is okay, and thank God she didn't hurt anybody else. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, tonight is Real Housewives of Potomac. Did we finally get to the finale of Real Housewives of Potomac? It seems like it's been 3 years at this point. This season, a lot of people say that it didn't work. It didn't work. It didn't come together in the way, even though the reunion, which they make every reunion look good. You know, the reunion looks, they're all in black. I don't know if that's for a funeral of the show or something. But, you know, if your take on this season and the question I keep getting asked, and I would love for your thoughts of what would be your cast changes? I know that's the most basic question ever, but what would you go going into the next season? Who would you get rid of?
The problem with this season was it started from last season's reunion. They had a conversation on colorism at the last season reunion, and I felt like they were not equipped to handle that conversation properly with the current cast. And I think because they did not have a proper moderated conversation on that and some of the other issues throughout the season, it has now turned into this issue between NECA and Dr. Wendy Asefo. And I hope at this reunion that we do find some resolution. That's what they've been saying. I've heard, I went to the Summer House Martha's Vineyard premiere party, and Candace was talking to some folks about the reunion, and apparently Giselle did not show any ownership. Are we surprised? No, we're not. But in regards to cast changes, I definitely think the Green Eye Bandits, there needs to be one, not both of them, but one or the other needs to go.
You kind of like Rinna and Erica Jane. It gives them a chance to grow a little bit without your partner.
Exactly. But I don't see Giselle being the one that they choose, to be honest. I don't. Even with Giselle losing her position next to Andy, I think they did that to be performative. They wanted the audience to have a reaction to that. I don't believe Giselle is going anywhere. Robin, that's why she started this other business. Don't be surprised if you hear that Robin's not returning next season.
Oh, poor Rob.
And based off of Anna Marie and Beverly Hills getting the boot, I think NECA won't be coming back either.
Yeah, I don't think so at all, which, by the way, thank you for bringing that up. Anna Marie Wiley, I hate that I forgot that Anna Marie Wiley made a very big statement that she is not coming back. And she in it was a very long statement, but also saying, like, listen, my mom had passed away. I came in weeks late to the show that was already filming. I wish I had gotten to share more of my story. And, you know, it was a very long statement. I'm usually all for Housewives getting a blanket two season start. You know, this one, I was like, I think you might disagree with me, but I was okay with this one just because I had read certain things about her that I was not happy with. And I don't know. I know I'm not the arbiter of anything and free speech and all of that, but I don't know. This year is going to be especially painful, I think, in due to election things. Also, her husband, I just think she almost did herself a favor not having to have that be brought up in a storyline. Some of her husband's misgivings in the past. What did you think about Anna Marie not being asked back?
Well, we have to make it clear. She didn't decide not to return. She was not asked back.
Yes, that's it.
Anna Marie was not asked back.
Yes.
I did hear from sources that there was a lot that she did film that they didn't include. I think by the end of the season, we're sort of like, why was she a diamond holder? I think it's because they did end up filming her a lot. Apparently, there were other parties. They did film her talking about losing her mom and that whole situation. But there was a lot that was left out that we heard that they discussed during the season in regards to her tweets, her husband's tweets, and things like that. But you're right. If she did come back for a second season, you know they're going to talk about that lawsuit against her husband and the essay of it all. So
yeah,
it might have been better for her not to return. But I'm also a little surprised because the ratings were still very much doing solid. Well without Serena. And I know Lisa said she's never returning. Good.
Dude, that's what I tweeted. I was like, God is good. God answers prayers. Like, I would never come back. Nobody asked you back. Yeah.
And the ratings still did very well without her. I think them deciding not to bring Anna Marie back was because they probably have their eyes on someone else that they want to bring back. I think their rumors are that, what's her name from past seasons? There's a rumor that one of the past Housewives might be returning for next season.
Oh, yeah. Not Camille, but the soap opera.
Yes.
You beast. It's on the tip of my you beast. I can't believe I'm. It's too nervous.
It's like God, my tongue.
Damn it. Housewives. I'm just. Eileen Davidson.
Yeah. Eileen Davidson.
Eileen Davidson.
There's a rumor that she might be coming back in next season. So maybe that's part of the reason, because if Eileen comes back, I'm sure she's expecting a certain amount of money too. So that might be part of the reason. And look, I've said Crystal hasn't brought a lot. She hasn't brought a lot over the last three seasons, but she is what they like in regards to money and being a housewife and diversity and things like that.
Well, she's also a reliable narrator. I usually believe if something comes out of Crystal, it's like even keeled. to me, I don't I don't feel like she is making out like when Rinna used to make like blatant like lies and misrepresentations, but even Anna Marie with like chasing that esophagus bone, like it just like let it like, you know, let the mouse go, you know, even Sutton tells some tall tales, you know, to me, you know, Crystal is like on the lower scale of any of that. And Kyle's whole game is just to try to like hide as much as she can. Screw that. Bring on Morgan Wade as a full-on housewife.
No, I want no.
I'm Morgan Wade. She stalked me, Kempire. Do you like me, Morgan?
Like, I want to see how that all works. I don't even care if they're dating. I just want to have her around make everybody uncomfortable.
At the reunion, maybe next year we'll see her at the reunion. I said, please, God, no. I don't want to see that. I don't want to see that.
Oh my God. At all. Well, listen, I know I've taken up so much of your time and I could talk to you for hours and hours because you are like Oprah. You make everything easy. You make it like this. You make good conversations.
Thank you.
Like, where do you see the future headed for reality TV? And like we talked about at the beginning, the future of pop culture, where do we go from here? Because we couldn't have predicted your platform and your voice. We couldn't have predicted Reddit. We couldn't have predicted podcasts. We couldn't, like, all of these things. Do you have any kind of in your mind where you think all of this is headed? Do you think it's gone too far, or do you think we have a lot farther to go?
I definitely think that reality TV does need some sort of reckoning, and not the one that Bethany's talking about. I mean, I hope for residuals for reality TV stars, but there definitely needs to be something that's happening. I think reality television is no longer reality. I think this is part of the reason why people are leaning more into the reality competition space, because you can actually have fun watching reality television. And that's probably partially why Drag Race still does so well, is this sort of competition aspect. Big Brother still does very well. The Traitors is doing extremely well for Peacock. So I think them leaning into that aspect of a competition, even with, you know, Love is Blind, it's still sort of like this competition show that gives the audience something that they can root for, that they're excited about. It feels different. It also feels somewhat real for them. In regards to pop culture, we're going to see a lot more of, I think, big name celebrities being exposed. Diddy, I feel it was just sort of like the tipping point, but I definitely think that more is going to be coming, especially in 2024. Don't quote me
watching that,
but I just feel that way.
Well, no, I was watching YouTube compilations of Wendy Williams talking about Diddy in the past before Diddy actually came on her show back in the day, and just all of the stuff that was out there or rumored to be out there. And I was one of those kind of innocents that I had turned a blind eye a little bit to Diddy, even though, and also, you know, we had that Quiet on the Set documentary in regards to Dan Schneider and Nickelodeon this week, you know, and you read so many insane things, but then with the Diddy stuff, you're like, oh, this is real. Like he really did this shit. More shit is coming out and more stuff. And that just, it turns your beard white. You're like, wow, that is, no, it's just really, really sad and insane. So, I mean, do you have any predictions on who that next, what that next shoe might drop on?
Oh my gosh. I definitely think within the hip hop arena, we're going to see a little bit more of that. You're starting to see a little bit more in regards to the Russell Simmons of it all, you know, even though he's in Bali.
That's been for years now. Yeah.
I mean, there have been so many stories. We just have never really been able to confirm them. And the fact that Cassie came out with her 35-page lawsuit that detailed, I think she only gave us a smidgen of what she
I
really...
I mean, Kid Cudi's car blowing up.
Oh. And can you imagine what else Diddy has done? And I don't think it's over for Diddy. I mean, literally, it's not. He's still facing multiple lawsuits from other people. So I don't necessarily have a name, but I definitely think it's going to be in the world of hip hop again. But look, Hollywood, like Quiet on the Set, another very disturbing documentary about something that has been happening in front of our faces, in front of children's faces for years. Now that we look back on it, we're like, what in the hell were we allowing our children to watch? What were we watching on that show? And this man is literally walking free, yeah, and may have been sort of like the perpetrator and sort of groomed a lot of these other abusers. So,
God, I'm happy to leave on a happy note, folks. How do you, you doing this yourself? You're a public, how do you deal with hate nowadays? Because the majority of people, you have so many like hardcore fans that love, but how do you deal with I always ask that of people, because as this gets like a little bigger and stuff like that, you deal with some of that and it gets really like, it's a bummer at first. You're just like, oh no, how did you learn to deal with it?
Oh, still learning. Yeah. Here's the thing. The fortunate thing for me is that I'm so busy working on the next story, I can't get caught up in what the comment section is saying. Nicki Minaj, who I would hope she would take her own advice, but she said recently in an interview, she's like, I don't talk to the internet. So I'm just like, you know what? I don't talk to the internet.
She doesn't talk to the internet. That's all she does. Talk to the internet. What are you talking about?
The whole Megan Thee Stallion.
Okay, I was like, what are you talking about?
Take your own advice. But I'm going to take that advice. Here's the thing. There are a lot, the good majority, if you really were to do the analytics of the amount of positivity that is thrown at you, I'm sure it's probably like 98% positive and maybe 2% of haters. It's unfortunate that we give the 2% more love and energy than and focus than we do to the people that are showing love. And I try to, at least when I first post a video, at least get to the love first before I pay attention to what negativity is saying. So I really don't spend my time in the comment section. Every once in a while, I'll see stuff, especially on Twitter. I remember they try to cancel me over Andy Cohen's story.
I remember that.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. But think about you. I think you were on vacation at the time or something like that. And I was like, oh my God, is this ruining his vacation?
No, because it was perfect timing. I turned off all the notifications. Most my notifications are off. But I people are going to believe what they want to believe, because even with that story, they believed I was in a club on a Saturday night taking film. I don't film myself. You think I'm under a table filming Andy Cohen twiddling some boy's nipple? No. Okay. I am reporting on it. Part of my job, very much like, but people will believe what they want to believe. Some people will still believe that I was at the club under a table filming Andy Cohen. Andy Cohen probably believes that he blocked me too.
Oh my God. That's great. Blocked by Jax and blocked by Andy Cohen. Listen, you are insanely, insanely fabulous. I love you so much. Thank you for doing this at last minute. I really appreciate this. You guys, I'm going to put all of his links. I want to go see this man live now. I need to see Kempire After Dark. I'm Los Angeles.
Oh, so I'll see you in LA.
Okay, but I will definitely be there when you come, because I just look up to you so much, man. Congratulations on what you have created. I can't wait to see where you go next. But thank you for taking all of this time with us today. We truly appreciate you helping us start our week.
Thank you.
So Bad It's Good is a Betches Media production. The show is hosted and produced by me, Ryan Bailey, with Meditza Lopez and Sandra Fryer. Additional support provided by Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales-Pico, and Rebecca Steinberg. Guest booking by Ali Friedlander. Video promotion by Laura Valencia. Be sure to send us your emails at sobaditsgoodwithryanbailey@gmail.com and follow the show at sobaditsgoodwithryanbailey on Instagram. And for additional craziness, go to patreon.com/sobaditsgood. Stay bad, baddies.
Betches.